Today, as we celebrate this Feast of the Holy Family, we have to recognize that with what is happening in the church and in the world, it has become one of the most important of the feast days in the church's year, because it is marriage and family that are under attack today. And so everything in our power must be done to be able to build that up. We can see just how much of an attack there is, because when Christmas came a couple of weeks ago, the New York Times, which somebody aptly, I think it might have been Reagan, but I'm not sure, somebody aptly called it Hell's Bible, they decided that it was a good time to run an article saying that the Holy Family of Jesus, Mary, and Joseph was a dysfunctional family, and went on for the article to explain all of that. Well, the only way that the Holy Family could be dysfunctional is if you took what's going on in the world today and said, that's what's normal. Consequently, the Holy Family looks like they're totally out of line. But of course, we know that the Holy Family is the example of what a family is to be. Obviously, none of our families is going to be exactly like them. None of you has a child who is God. None of you has a mother who is perfect. None of you has a father who has achieved the heights of holiness, I'm assuming. Consequently, we can't say our family has to be exactly like that. It's not going to happen. But nonetheless, we hold them up as the model for what a family is to be. And while it has always been a necessity, it is far more so today than ever before. And the reason for that is because of what is going on in the family. We live in a society with a divorce rate that is nearly 60%, and it is the children who are being harmed most by this. There was an article that came out just this last week. It said, for the first time in history, we have more people who are in their 30s and 40s and 50s who have never been married. And then they went on to explain why. And the number one reason, they said, is because they don't have an example of what a good marriage and family is to look like. And based on what it is that they see, they don't want it. And so we have to look at that for ourselves and ask, what is going on that our young people don't want what it is that they're seeing? Well, one of the things, of course, is what the psychologists have been pointing out for the last decade, that we truly do have a pandemic, and it is called narcissism. We have raised a whole bunch of narcissists in the last couple of generations, and obviously, a narcissist can't be married. How can you make a vow to love another person when you're in love with yourself? It doesn't work. It can't. So we need to get our focus off of ourselves first and foremost so that we can actually love someone else. Then there's the problem of the revolving door. If you look back into the 1940s and ask teachers what was the biggest problem in the classroom, they'll tell you spitballs and binders. If you go into the 1980s and 90s, they will tell you it was weapons that were in the classroom. When you go into the 2010s, the teacher said the most difficult thing is knowing who is whose brother and sister this week, because it's a revolving door. So-and-so moved in with so-and-so this week, and this person is living with that one, and they have no idea who's supposed to be related to whom, which obviously they're not anyway, but it's just a mess. And so we look at these kinds of things and say, no wonder kids don't want anything to do with this. In fact, the families that are intact all tell me the same thing. If they have friends whose families are living in this other way, they want to come over to the house of the intact family. They want to spend time with a family that has a mom and a dad. They want some stability. That's what parents are to provide for their children. We look at it and say the very first purpose of marriage is the procreation and education of children. But part of the education of those children is what it looks like to be married and to have a family and to provide security and stability for those children. The stability of a child is based on the stability of the marriage, their parents. And if that marriage is not stable, the children are not going to be stable. And so we can look at the education and say, yes, we need to teach them reading and writing and arithmetic and all the other things. But right now, we have a human problem that is way bigger than mathematics. We need to teach the kids how to be human, which means how to love. And that's what is not happening in so many marriages today. So that's what we really need to look at for your family. Your family is called to be a holy family, modeled certainly after the holy family, but you are called to holiness every bit as much as anybody else is. And your family is called to be holy, to be saints. Now, you can go back into the Middle Ages and you can see that there were some families that basically ran their family like a convent or a monastery. That's not what you necessarily have to be doing, obviously. But prayer has to be at the center of your family. I have been roundly ripped to shreds by somebody for talking about this, and I will continue to talk about it, because we have to recognize that even before we can have children, there has to be a union of the husband and wife. Your union is a spiritual union. Now, people will continually look and say, oh, no, it says that the two become one flesh. That's what marriage is all about. On a natural level, yeah. Jesus said, what God has joined, let no one put asunder. God didn't join your bodies. God joined your souls. That is what the physical union expresses, is the spiritual union of the two. The spiritual union has to come first. So now the question then is, what are we doing to build that up? The only way to build up a spiritual union is through spiritual things. Prayer has to be at the center. If marriage is under attack, prayer obviously has to be at the center anyway, just to protect your family. But we don't want you just to survive. We want you to thrive. And so build up that spiritual union between the husband and wife first, so that that will overflow into the children. Build up the relationship of husband and wife first, because that will overflow into the children. It's that which is going to provide the stability. There are lots of people who in their marriages are just tolerating things. That's not the way that a marriage ought to be. Yes, you're living with somebody of the opposite sex and you're going to have to tolerate a lot. I recognize that. But I'm talking about just day by day tolerating being in the same house with this person. That's pretty pathetic. Now the question is, what are you doing to change that? What are we doing to make that better? Because that's what we really need to look at. So first of all, again, prayer has to be at the center. You have to have your own prayer life. And then you have to pray together as a couple. And then you need to pray together as a family. Father Peyton, back in the 1950s, used to say, the family that prays together stays together. Is God really at the center of your life? Is he at the center of your family? He's the one who put your souls together, and he is there in that union of the two. And so he wants that union to grow. He wants that union to develop and to be perfected. So want to work at that. Want to really look at what it means when you consider the vows that you made on the day you got married. You're going to love this person. What does that look like? It's a huge problem we have in America right now that we don't even know what that means. I've many times said I used to ask the couples when they came in to get married why they want to get married. Every single time I got the exact same answer. Because we're in love. That's a good answer. When I'd ask them what it means, it was stuff like, oh, it's this warm feeling that we have when we're together. Isn't that cute? That'll last for about a week after you get married. And then what? There has to be something way deeper than just an emotional attachment to somebody. What is love? It's dying to yourself. It's living for another. It's putting the other before yourself. It's serving the other. It's seeking always the good of the other person. Now, we live in an absolutely self-centered society, which means that we're looking at ourselves rather than the other. That's the narcissistic problem. I'm in love with me. I'm not in love with you. We need to get the focus off ourselves, and we need to get it on the other person. The other, first and foremost, being God. And then following from that relationship with God to your spouse, and following from that to your children. That's the proper order of things. That's what we see in the Holy Family. And that's what we need to see in Holy Families. Now, if our 30 and 40-year-olds are saying that they aren't getting married because they don't like the example that they've seen of what married life is, then we need to do something. Those who are married need to provide an example of what it, not just tolerating somebody, of loving somebody and being loved by that person. That's what love is. It's a relationship. It's a two-way street. But if it's a matter of just simply looking at it and saying, I'm not happy, it's not fulfilling me, it's because you're looking at yourself. You're only going to be fulfilled by loving, by giving, by seeking the good of the other. We need to get the focus off of ourselves so that we can love the other person. So if you go to a counselor to talk about your marriage problems, they'll talk about the communications, which are essential. They'll talk about the relationship, which is essential. And they will talk about the physical part of the marriage, which is obviously essential. They will not talk one word about your prayer life, about your spiritual union, about what marriage is as the foundation. But you and I know what that is because Jesus told us what it is. It is what God has joined. And if God put this together, then we need to look to him to be able to see how we can develop this, how we can perfect it. That's the example children need to see. If we have two people who are truly loving one another, two people who are serving one another in the Lord, what a joyful family that's going to be. So you can ask yourself, number one, how much prayer is there in my family? Now I know we're all really busy, but the old saying is, if you're too busy to pray, you're too busy. Get rid of some stuff. So I keep challenging you with, how much time do you spend with your TV or your computer or your telephone? You really don't have time to pray? Because there's too much time on the phone? Get rid of the stupid phone. Put the focus on the Lord first. Then ask yourself, how much joy is there in my household? How much joy is in my own heart? Think about when you first got married. I hope that when your spouse came home, you were filled with joy to see that person come home. And today, maybe you groan when that person comes home. What do you need to do to get it back? Start praying for your spouse if you're not doing so. It's an easy thing to forget because we're together all the time. Exactly. That's why you need to pray for your spouse. They're with you all the time. They need your prayers. But pray for the grace to love this person and to be in love with this person. If you're rolling your eyes and groaning when the person comes home or dreading the idea, then it's not just enough to say, help me to love this person. Because again, you can tolerate somebody, you can serve them, you can do that, but you can do it with a bad attitude. Pray to be in love with this person. Now, you might not even want to be in love with that person anymore. Maybe it's gotten that bad. Go back and ask yourself, what did you promise to God when you got married? For the sake of your children, as well as for yourself and your spouse, pray to be in love with that person. Because if that's there, the joy is going to be there. The fulfillment is going to be there in that person because you're going to be able to love the Lord in that person. You're going to be able to love that person in the Lord. You're going to be filled with joy in that person's presence because you're in love with them. But truly in love, not the emotional stuff, but a deep, profound love. That is the greatest education that you can give to your children, is the example of what it means to be a holy family, to be a holy marriage, to be a holy person. That is not easy. It's a tremendous privilege that is given to parents. It's also a tremendous responsibility. And so while we have to look at it and say, yes, the first end of marriage is indeed the procreation and education of children. To do it properly, the first priority in marriage must be God, must be your spiritual life, so that being built up is going to be able to help you to look to the next priority in marriage, which is your spouse, so that being built up is going to go to the children. And give to the children what is the very best, what they need the most. They need to be loved. They need stability. They need security. They need the example of what it is to be a truly Christian person, which means a person of love, a person of charity, a person of joy. That's what we see in Scripture about the people who were alive at the time of our Lord, shortly thereafter, the early Christians. It was love and it was joy. That's what we're lacking in our society. You and I are supposed to be the leaven in the world. We're supposed to bring the light into the darkness. That's the light. It is the love of the Lord. And that love of the Lord is poured into your heart so you can pour that into your spouse and you can pour that into your children. that's what Jesus wants for you. He wants you to be holy. He wants your family to be holy. Now, that may require some major adjustments in some marriages and in some families. But then look at what's going on in your family and ask, do you want it to continue the way it is? Or do you want to make some adjustments so that your family can become what it is called to be, a truly holy family?